We are wrapping up our sermon series this week on the gifts of the Spirit. I'm sorry, I squirted water all over myself. I just like baptized myself, so I'm a little like, oh, I don't know what I did here. It's the Holy Ghost here. I hope it's been a helpful series in like trying to reframe maybe some of the gifts that seem like a little odd to our modern ears, like, you know, tongues and prophecy and stuff. Today, though, I'd like to close with the gift of leadership. And then as I was prepping, I was finding it a little bit meta to preach about leadership, right? It's like a writer writing about writing. So I reached out to a few people in the congregation who I know are in leadership roles in different parts of their lives and just asked a few questions that they were gracious enough to answer. Any of these people could probably actually give this sermon on leadership, which as I was writing, I was like, just kind of note to self also. And I thought that it would be helpful to pepper the talk this morning with just some of the collective wisdom of the people in our church who operate in this gift. I'll add in a few of my own thoughts. And I want to use Romans chapter 12 to give us a frame for the discussion to guide it. So if you find it helpful to follow along, it's in your notes. I'm going to read most of that chapter. And what I'd like to invite you to do is to just listen for how Paul is helping to shape and create a particular kind of culture in a faith community, because that's part of leadership, right? It's shaping and creating culture. So this is Romans 12. He says, "Do not be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of the mind, so that you might discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body, we have many members, and not all the members have the same function. So we, who are many, are one body in Christ, and individually we are members one of another. We have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us. Prophecy in proportion to faith, ministry in ministering, the teacher in teaching, the encourager in encouragement, the giver in sincerity, the leader in diligence, the compassionate in cheerfulness. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in affliction. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Pursue hospitality to strangers. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be arrogant, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all." All right, so some of us may have grown up around some distorted understandings of leadership. I think in our culture, leadership sometimes gets reduced to things like who has the most charisma, right? Or to control and dominance, you know, this sort of misuse of power. Sometimes it's reduced to branding and platform building, like whoever is the shiniest gets the loudest voice. And some of us may have seen leaders in the church realm who can command a room, but who couldn't love people very well. And there's nothing wrong with being able to command a room, said the preacher, little self-consciously. It's just, don't mistake that gift for being able to effectively care for a community. Charisma alone does not equal good leadership. So Erica Carmichael, who is in leadership at Zeal Credit Union, she described this difference well. She said, "Over the years, my understanding of leadership changed. Early on, I thought leadership was about like being good at something, having influence, or being given authority. Later, I learned it wasn't even about the position. Leadership is stewardship. It's caring for people. It's serving others. It's recognizing that our choices impact those around us." All right, so we're going to be looking at this kind of healthy leadership that she grew into. Now, I don't think in my entire life I've ever given a three-point sermon or a five-point sermon. That's not how I preach. I tend to do what they call like narrative preaching. But this morning, in my first time in like 20 years, you guys are going to get my first five-point sermon. I felt like it was like the most effective way for me to integrate several voices with some kind of structure And there were just a few themes that kept popping up as I was reading through people's responses. So the first theme is that leadership starts with serving a purpose larger than ourselves. All right, so Paul opened Romans 12 by urging believers to offer themselves in service to God and to resist being conformed by the patterns of the world. Right, so leadership, it starts with orientation. Right, before you start to ask, like, how do I lead, or like, what makes for good leadership, we might ask, like, what purpose am I serving? And so one of the things that Lisa Ruby shared about her role in leading a nonprofit was she said, I'm constantly reminding myself of our mission so that I can direct and redirect my staff and myself in that direction. Right? It's an amazing opportunity to shape the future of the organization and our employees, and I don't take it lightly. But leadership also means knowing when something is not in your lane and letting it go. Right? And so people with a gift of leadership are good at keeping a tight focus so that a group can achieve something that they couldn't if they were doing it on their own or as individuals. Right? And several people who responded to me spoke about keeping the larger purpose in front of people. Leadership helps an organization or a team stay aligned with their calling. And so if we were going to put that in like spiritual language, we might say that wise leaders help people discern what the Spirit has called them to do and then try not to get distracted from that task. Right? They help a group remember who they are, what they're there to do together. The second theme is that leadership creates clarity so that everyone's gifts can flourish. Right, so in Romans, Paul uses this metaphor of a body. Right? He says, different people have different gifts, but all belong to the same organism. Right? In another part of the New Testament, he expands on that image. Right? He says, some people are the hands, some people are the eyes, some people are the feet. No one should disparage what they have to offer because every part is important to the whole. Right? And that's true if you're on like a sports team. That's true if you're in a choir. It's true of like your department at work. It's true of a church. And then among those gifts that Paul was describing, he specifically names leadership. And he says leaders should exercise their gift in diligence. And when I first read that, that caught my attention, in diligence. Diligence means careful and persistent effort. And so in leadership, in Paul's understanding, that involves thoughtful, deliberate action that helps the community to function well. So many of the respondees talked about the importance of clarity and planning and intentional communication. And I really loved how Jen Nelson put it. She said, a quote I try to live by is clear is kind. I know I thought you could get that tattooed on your arm. I probably need to get that tattooed on my arm. Clear is kind. She said, I found one of the greatest frustrations that people experience from leaders comes from unclear expectations. And as leaders, we sometimes assume other people know what we mean because the expectations seem obvious to us. However, if processes, goals, or responsibilities exist only in our heads, we unintentionally create confusion and uncertainty. Early in our marriage, I was like, Rachel, can't you read my mind? It's so clear, like what we need. But Jen serves as the director of curriculum and professional learning, is I getting that right, in the Saline School District. But I liked how she connected clarity with care. Right, that clear communication is a way of loving people well. And then Suzanne Jones offered a similar thought, but with a really helpful metaphor. So Suzanne said, I run a team of internal colleagues and companies that we outsource responsibilities to. We all need to dance together to the same song at the same tempo. And I just love that. We all need to dance together to the same song at the same tempo. And so like she's pictured almost like being a conductor. Right, and trying to make everything work. She said, communication is key. She said, I prep a team ahead of time about what needs to get done so that they have time to plan it into their schedules. I don't like, quote unquote, fire drills. They do happen. Many things come up that require immediate attention. The team is across 29 countries and 200 hospitals with at least 2 doctors at each and their support staff. So if we can plan for the big stuff, then we have space for when the small stuff comes up. Right, and I thought that this image of everybody dancing together to the same song was helpful because it shows how good leaders help people move together. Right, they create just enough structure and just enough shared understanding that individuals can contribute their gifts without constantly having to react to confusion or to crisis. And this is where I think that management and leadership intersect or overlap a little bit. So Tim Kowalski, he said, I think people confuse managing people with leading them. thought, oh, that's poignant. I think people confuse managing people with leading them. So, but management structures are the means to an end, right? The structures are just the tools that help people thrive, and leaders are trying to help people thrive as they move toward a shared goal. So Lisa Ruby also spoke about communication, but she spoke about it as a way of like alleviating fears and anxieties, right? So in her case, there's concern for funding in the nonprofit sector. And so communicating well is a way of like attending to the human beings that are involved, right? To their concerns, their uncertainties, their need to feel seen and heard. And it says, we're in this together. I'm fighting for you. I'm pulling for you. And your feelings about it are important. Right? So good leadership creates an environment where people know what is expected, where their contributions matter, and then where every person can find their place in the body. And in that kind of community, then the gifts aren't trying to compete with each other, or they're not trying to like be in rivalry, but they're flourishing alongside one another for the good of the whole. The third theme is that leadership is relational, right? And I would add, people aren't projects. I'm going to spend the most time on this point because our leaders spent the most time on this point. And it's the longest section of Romans 12 is about relationships. Right? It says things like love one another with mutual affection, outdo one another in showing honor, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. If it's possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. So I would like to share with you what Tim Kowalski wrote about how he grew in his leadership style and how he talked about how it became more relational over time. So he said, early in my human resources career, I was trained not to connect significantly with my employees, to be professional, to not be involved emotionally or spiritually in any way, since that might compromise my ability to be objective and fair when dealing with future difficult decisions involving them. He said, I understand that, but I now disagree with it. I found, especially with my own teams, that they needed me to be vulnerable so that they could be that way too, right? To share and to connect with them in the good times as well as their difficult times. During the last third of my career, I was very open about involving myself in their personal hardships, praying for them if they wanted me to. Now, obviously, you need to know your audience, he said, right? Some would take offense at that, but many times I did, and people were grateful. I had a monthly newsletter for all 400 or so employees where I talked about my work and my personal life. And if something hard was going on, I would ask them for their thoughts and prayers. I never preached, but I also didn't shy away from comforting those who were going through hard times. He said, AA, the church, and other influences gave me the courage to do this at first until it became more natural. And I talked a lot about what was going on with my kids and my grandkids to almost everyone. That was the common link, even if they personally may not agree with my quote-unquote lifestyle as a gay man. So I really appreciated Tim's ability to just reflect on how he grew, right? Because nobody leads perfectly, right? We're all learning and growing, hopefully. And so being open to adopting or adapting to what works is really crucial for the long term. And then many of the responses returned again and again to the ideas that Tim was describing about building trust and about empathy and about vulnerability and about genuine care for people. So I'm going to share a little longer story with you, and this one's from Laura Schramm, who's the senior academic director at Rackham at U of M. So I found this an impactful story. She said, compassion also feels central to wise leadership because suffering is everywhere, including at work. It's part of the human experience. People come to work carrying health challenges, caregiving responsibilities, grief, personal loss, family stress, and so many other hidden burdens. Wise leaders genuinely care about how their people are doing, and they show that care by asking, listening, empathizing, and sometimes acting to alleviate suffering. One story comes to mind, she says, is about a director-level colleague who had been absent from work for quite some time. So we had a meeting scheduled for his first day back in the office. And at the beginning of the meeting, rather than jumping into the business aspect of the agenda, I simply said that I knew he had been out. I didn't know why. I hoped he was doing okay, and I just wanted him to know I had been thinking of him. And he immediately broke down in tears and shared that he had lost his brother unexpectedly and still couldn't imagine life without him. When I didn't shrink back from his suffering and simply stayed present with him, He fell on my shoulder, sobbing. I was not his supervisor, but I strongly encouraged him to go home and reassured him that nothing we had going on at work was more important than him taking care of himself. And I also let his supervisor know that he needed more time away, and he ended up taking several more weeks off, and I dropped off cookies on his doorstep. My relationship with him was never the same. He's had my back ever since, and when I was promoted into my current role, he was one of my strongest champions. He's also willing to bring hard things to me, and there's more candor and trust in our working relationship. I've had many experiences like this where just pausing to show real compassion led to a significant shift in a relationship, and one that benefited both the people involved and the organization. When I think about wise leadership, compassion is not a quote-unquote soft extra. It's part of how trust is built, how truth is told, and how people become brave enough to do good work together. Right, Vanessa Lyons, who's one of our Zoomies, who's up there, she's a nursing professor. She said something really similar. She said, everybody's going through struggles. And so valuing other people beyond their role on a team can increase productivity, but it makes a world of difference to the team member. Lisa Ruby said, when I feel myself falling short or becoming impatient, I try to see God or an angel in that human and offer them grace and compassion. When people make mistakes, I remember that we've all fallen short, right? It's like it's that connection of finding empathy and leading through vulnerability and through empathy. Right, Paul's vision of leadership emerges from this same conviction. It's that people are not obstacles to be managed or resources to be deployed. Right? They're members of one body, and their joy affects us, and their suffering affects us, and their flourishing affects us. Theme 4, leadership is grounded in humility. So Romans 12, I think it contains an interesting tension as I read it. I think it's in like three different ways Paul tells us not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought, not to pretend like we're wiser than we actually are, right? He's like, be realistic about your gifts. Do not get too big for your britches. But in the same breath, he tells those with gifts of leadership to exercise those gifts diligently, right? Lead with confidence, persistence, and care. So humility is not self-doubt. Right, it's okay to be good at something, it's okay to know you're good at it, and to enjoy the gifts that God has given to you. Humility remains remembering that leadership exists for the sake of the community rather than for the elevation of the leader. And as Erica said, she said, even after all these years, I'm still learning. Leadership has humbled me more than it's elevated me. The older I get, the less I think leadership is about having the answers, and the more I think it's about seeking wisdom, serving people well, and then trusting God with the outcomes. Or as Vanessa put it, she said, leadership is not about authority, pay raises, or recognition. People think leadership comes with accolades and recognition, but leaders generally have to deal with more slings and arrows. Being a leader can be extremely emotionally hard and often requires the sacrifice of self. Laura said, leadership begins with the humility to ask, what don't I know? What am I missing? Whose voice isn't in the room? Right? A leader cannot reasonably know everything. And then that reminds me of what we heard from Tim earlier about the importance of vulnerability, that good leaders are willing to be vulnerable about their deficits, and vulnerability is always a risk. Right? Sometimes it brings criticism, sometimes it brings pain, but it's the thing that often allows trust to grow. And I liked what Jen Nelson said. She said, one of my favorite quotes from Brené Brown is, a brave leader is someone who says, I see you, I hear you, I don't have all the answers, but I'm going to keep listening and asking questions. Right? True leaders create conditions where people feel safe sharing their ideas and their concerns and their perspectives. And leadership is often less about having all the solutions and more about being willing to learn alongside others and ask thoughtful questions to move the work forward. This is something Laura Schramm said too. I thought this was really a helpful point, too. She said, organizational leadership scholars like Amy Edmondson and Jane Dutton, they've written about how humility and compassion help create the conditions for psychological safety. She said, I think psychological safety is essential for wise decision-making. People sometimes hear that phrase and think it means psychological comfort, but it actually means almost the opposite. It's the belief that you won't be punished or humiliated for speaking up with ideas, concerns, questions, or mistakes. When leaders create psychological safety, they create the conditions for learning, innovation, honesty, and quality control. And in that sense, humility is not weakness in leadership. Right, so in other words, it can be hard to speak up when you're not the person in charge. And good leaders understand that, and they work intentionally to try to make disagreements safe. Right? Most people don't find it easy to challenge a leader, which is why wise leaders, they learn how to receive disagreement without becoming defensive. Or if they do, as I did earlier this week, you apologize and you own that. Like, I'm secretly thrilled when a staff member or a board member or a congregant says, I think I see this differently. I think that in part comes up from, I grew up in a house where conflict was pretty safe. Like, I'm not conflict averse. We were able to have a lot of conflict, and I knew that we were loved, and so for me, I'm like, oh, it's just conflict. It'll be fine. The place where it usually gets hard for me is if it, like, triggers something from my Trump, you know, being outed and fired. Like, there's certain things that trigger me, but that's on me as a leader, right, to be aware of that and to have my own therapy and to sort of own that. But in general, I'm like, oh, it's just conflict. I like having a good argument. I like being challenged. It hones my thinking. To me, it's a little bit of like a fun challenge. Like, okay, I get to incorporate even more information into this puzzle for decision making. Right? It's like, ooh, this is great. Like, some puzzles are really, really hard, but like, and some of that I just find it kind of stimulating. And we might not end up agreeing, but I've really tried to like build the culture of this church around being able to agree to disagree on disputable matters while erring on the side of inclusion. Ken wrote a whole book about it, right? And I want people to know they won't end up on the outs with me just because they see something differently. Like, disagreement should never threaten belonging. Disagreement should not mean somebody's sicking the Justice Department on you. Nobody got, okay, yeah. Shouldn't be punitive, right? Theme 5, leadership is most effective when it embodies integrity. And so I'm going to read this story that Erica sent to me. She said, I've been a leader for more than 20 years across several industries, but when I think about leadership, my mind doesn't go first to a boardroom or to an office or to a management position. It goes back to church. My first leadership role began when I was 12 years old. I directed a combined youth choir made up of 3 churches in Detroit while also serving as the choir director at my own church. Looking back, I realized I carried a lot of responsibility for a kid. I helped make announcements. I was promoting our annual concert at other churches and inviting youth groups to participate and coordinating rehearsals. And at the time, I thought leadership was pretty simple. People listened to me. The choir sounded good. I loved every moment of it. In my mind, I was basically Sister Mary Clarence from Sister Act, except cooler, because I would spontaneously signal the musicians to stop playing so we could sing a cappella, and then I could bring the musicians back in, right? It's that conductor thing again, right? And she said, then the church mothers got involved. If you've never met a church mother, picture someone in her 70s or 80s wearing a beautiful Kentucky Derby-style hat, a beautiful suit, and carrying authority of somebody who has just seen about everything. Week after week, they would remind me that because I was a leader, there were certain things I shouldn't do. I shouldn't run to the corner store with my friends during the church service. I shouldn't chew gum during service. One mother even told me I needed to stop sitting with my friends and sit with the adults so I could take notes during the sermon. As a 12-year-old, I was not interested in any of that, so I quit. At the time, I thought I was walking away from leadership because people were making too many rules, but looking back, I realized something deeper was happening. I had discovered that leadership comes with responsibility. People watch leaders differently. Expectations change. Influence carries weight. And the gift of leadership showed up in my life long before I had the maturity to understand what it required. So what she's just saying is character matters when you lead, or maybe I should say character should matter for healthy community building. Toward the end of Romans 12, Paul offers a series of short exhortations, right? He says, hold fast to what is good, live in harmony with one another, do not repay anyone evil for evil. And actually, he goes on about that even more, of like, don't take vengeance on people. That's not good leadership. But take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. Right? We don't often talk about noble, things that are noble, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. The people I emailed suggested that what people most need from leaders right now is trustworthiness. They want leaders who tell the truth, who admit mistakes, who communicate honestly, kind of keep showing up. Lisa said, people need strong leaders who are telling the truth, are compassionate, and are tirelessly working on their behalf. World and political leaders certainly do not look like that. It seems like they always have an ulterior motive. And then Suzanne said, I'm always transparent when I make a mistake. I never want my boss to hear about it from someone else first. And I thought, oh, you can take that advice to the bank, any of us, right? Never let your boss hear about a mistake from someone else first. And I know I've gone a little bit long here, but I'm going to end by briefly just talking about how each of these leaders' faith shapes them, and I'm just going to let their voices carry this. Vanessa said, my faith has made me a servant leader to others. Right? Just as Jesus sought to raise those around him, especially those excluded or less fortunate, I feel as a leader, I'm also called to support and to empower others. Lisa said, I pray for guidance, which might look like actual prayer or journaling or taking a walk. I walk and pray all the time too. Clears the head. And she said, never respond or act when you're in a red zone. That's a great lesson. Jesus' story makes me want to fight for what I believe in and for what our organization stands for. Tim said, toward the end, I regularly asked for wisdom as well as the ability and the courage to do what is right in a given situation. And I also began praying for the people I worked for and those who worked for me daily. And I'm just going to pause there because I think sometimes people are like, well, why would you do that? I mean, prayer is not like a slot machine where you put it in, pull the lever, and what you want to happen happens. Prayer is like tuning our hearts oftentimes, right? And when you're praying for people and praying for them daily, you're seeing them as humans and allowing your heart to be shaped by compassion and empathy for them. Erica said, people often look to leaders to determine whether they should panic or persevere. And because of that, I believe leadership requires a posture of humility, steadiness, and faith. It requires the willingness to listen, learn, seek counsel, admit when you don't have all the answers, and it requires trusting God enough to lead with conviction while remaining open to his direction. Suzanne just said, pray, 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 exclamation point. And Jen said, my faith reminds me to lead with compassion, grace, and humility while always striving to treat people with dignity and respect. My faith is not separate from my leadership. It is foundational to who I am and to how I seek to support and to care for others around me. All right, so what I've heard most clearly this morning is that leadership is about caring for people. Right? Let love be genuine, is what Paul says. And so this gift of leadership, it is the Spirit-given work of helping a community live into its calling. And it requires being able to speak with clarity so that other people's gifts can flourish. It requires relationships where people are honored and heard and valued. It requires courage to make difficult decisions, and it requires character that's shaped by humility and love and prayer. And I think all of us lead in different ways of our lives, even if you're like, I don't do any leading. Like, even if you're raising a kid, you're leading, right? And so we're leading in ways that are small as well as ways that are large. And so I just ask that God would bless that gift wherever it manifests in our lives. All right, we'll just say a quick thank you maybe to the people who took time to write to me on that. So thank you to Laura and Tim and Lisa and Erica and Jen and Suzanne. I just really appreciate it. Oh, and to Vanessa. Vanessa online too. Sorry about that. And I think what we'll do is we'll take a little time. We often do meditation, guided meditation or silence. I thought we'll just make a little bit of time in silence for you to just pray for whatever you've brought in on your heart this morning before God. Lord, I pray for everyone in here who operates in a gift of leadership in whatever capacity. I pray especially for those who operate in a gift of leadership at higher levels. Lord, I just ask that you would bless them, that you would continue to give them wisdom and humility and care for people and allow them to be vulnerable as they're leading people. Because right now, I think our culture needs people who are able to lead with vulnerability and with real like character and authenticity. Lord, we ask that through this, we'd be able to reflect your love for us in creating healthy communities wherever we go. In your name we pray. Amen.